You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Ian McEwan's latest novel, Nutshell, is narrated by a 9-month-old fetus who's confined upside down in his mother Trudy's womb. From this increasingly uncomfortable vantage point, he gathers knowledge of the outside world by listening to the radio, podcasts, audiobooks, and to conversation Trudy has with her lover Claude, and their plot to murder Trudy's husband John, the father of her unborn child. Michio Kakutani called this novel Mr. McEwan's 16th, a smart, funny, and utterly captivating in a rave review in the September 5th New York Times. It's published by Doubleday under the Nanny Talese imprint, and I'm very pleased that it brings Ian McEwan back to our show. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Weren't you inspired to create this narrative by an afternoon you spent with your heavily pregnant daughter-in-law a couple of years ago?
Absolutely right.
But how does that get the wheels going?
Well, I was sitting talking to her. She was, I was looking at, you know, that hopeful knoll, that little hump that was seemed to be getting bigger even as we spoke. And I thought, and we were talking about the baby. And she didn't know whether it was a boy or a girl. She didn't want to know, nor did my son. And I thought, what an extraordinary vantage point this could be if you could grant this little person full cognition of the world. And then I forgot all about it. I made a note in a notebook. And then, must have been a month later, I was at a very boring meeting where I had to keep a look of polite attention on my face. And I started daydreaming. And I got one of those gifts that writers sometimes get handed, almost like a telegram, a first sentence. So here I am upside down in a woman. And I remembered that moment with my daughter-in-law, and that was the very beginning.
And some writers will tell me that they need that first sentence to get it going. Others tell me that that first sentence is sometimes in the middle of the third chapter. Right?
Exactly. Just as you can't build a tunnel without putting in pit props that you will later pull away, sometimes it's just an enabling device. But sometimes it just sticks, and so it's still there. It's the same sentence.
But you've borrowed elements the plot of Hamlet, for example, including also names of some of the characters and even the title. Why Hamlet?
I happened, actually, pure chance to
the
take
title
down
I
Hamlet.
I mean Nutshell, not Hamlet.
Oh, yeah. I could count myself king of infinite space were it not that I have bad dreams. I could be bounded in a nutshell. So coming across that halfway through composition was also a lucky break. But every now and then I take a Shakespeare play off my shelf. I open it usually in the middle. I don't necessarily go read the whole thing. Just to be back in the pulse of those iambic moments, those, and also the trochees, the reverse stress. Everybody who writes in English, whether they read or love Shakespeare or not, is in his debt. The language is drenched in Shakespeare.
There is that Oedipal subplot in Hamlet, and that's kind of a theme here. But you also allude to Macbeth, Lolita, Tale of Two Cities, and some other literary classics. Was it as much fun to write as it sounds?
I was having a great time. I thought, this is a playful novel. I've abandoned all laws of biology and physics. Once you set out on this little voyage with a fetus narrator, that immediately other things become apparent. He's got to eat and drink everything his mother does, so since she loves her wine, he will say you won't know a good Sancerre without it being decanted through a healthy placenta.
He prefers it to Sauvignon Blanc, even though Sancerres are Sauvignon Blancs.
Well, he prefers it to New Zealand Sauvignon Blancs, which he thinks are a little too mineral, too grassy. Mm-hmm.
It sounds to me like writing this allowed you to have a lot of fun with all sorts of things that you also think about. You gave also lots of opinions to this unborn fetus.
Yeah, he's quite mouthy. He's got a lot of opinions. Some of them are mine. Some of them just happen to fit the plot. He listens to the news a great deal, so he's concerned about the world he's about to join. But he's also concerned, rather, as Hamlet, his forebear, is about either avenging or preventing the plot he sees unfolding, or he hears unfolding around him.
He ruminates on the vocal fry of female voices he hears on the radio, pokes fun at the idea of trigger warnings and the notion that people can self-identify as whatever race or sex that they want. He's listening to a lot of BBC.
He's listening to just about everything he can get his ears on. I've got in a bit of trouble about gender identity and stuff like that, but my view is let 1,000 flowers blossom as far as identity goes. But you cannot make the self the outer edge and the limit of your politics. You've got to let the self be at the center of it and then think of others. And I worry a bit about campus politics and how, for example, at Emory, when someone saw Trump 2016 on a sidewalk, they went and complained to the president of the university instead of just writing "not" in front of it or wiping it out or going to register some more voters, you know, being a little more active and a little less concerned about the self.
Your narrator is worried about what's going to happen to him after he's born and how he will end up.
Yes.
And we're saying he.
He's definitely a he. Mm-hmm. His hand brushes against the little prawn, and from that moment he thinks, well, it's rather a shame. Humans seem so complex. Why are there only two genders? Come on, let's have lots more. Yes, he's very worried. He thinks the plotters, his mother and his uncle, are going to give him away and that he'll be abandoned to some terrible family.
It can be tricky to write from a child's perspective. The child's lack of experience usually limits what he knows, but that doesn't seem to be the case here. You allowed yourself to have your narrator be wise way beyond his years, or should I perhaps say beyond his months?
Yes. He reflects on his youth a great deal when he was just a tiny thing and could really bounce around inside the vast space of the womb, and now he's squashed up. So, yeah, he's already nostalgic and full of dread and full of excitement all at once about the world that he's going to join.
It takes him a while to realize, some chapters into the book, that Claude, who's having this torrid affair with his mother, is his father's younger brother. I don't want to give away too much, but so I'll be careful not to reveal much more, but this plot does take some unexpected turns.
Yes.
But still, it bothers him that it's Claude and not his father. Why does Trudy prefer Claude to his father?
Claude is a creature of utter banality who speaks only in clichés, yeah. Whereas my narrator's father is a poet. And Claude has a fatal combination of being one of the most boring men on earth, but one of the most sexually potent and capable.
He also has money.
He has money.
He's a real estate developer.
Yes, but he wants more, and that's why they want to murder my man's father, sell the house, which is worth somewhere between £6 and £8 million, and dump the kid and go over and live at Claude's in luxury. So, yes, it's a plot, though, which I don't mind giving away because it's so dependent on Hamlet in many other respects. My poor fetus narrator, at a point of despair, thinks he's going to finish it all. He has a lot of thoughts of suicide, like Hamlet himself. Tries to strangle himself with the umbilical cord. There's a ghost. I've never done a ghost before. I've always been too much of a realist for ghosts, but I think when you do Hamlet again, you have to have a ghost.
So you gave yourself the freedom to write a book that was unlike any of your other books.
In some sense, Leonard, it's a return to the kind of writing I was doing in the 70s, a long time back, when I was 22 years old. I had some crazy narrators. I had an ape who was married to a novelist, was reflecting on how difficult it is to write your second novel. I had some psychotic, crazy narrators that somehow set me free, and I think this little person set me free to cast off my usual, habitual connection to researching, getting everything right, going to see neurosurgeons or theoretical physicists or spies, just to stay at my desk, not ask experts any opinions.
My guest is Ian McEwan, the best-selling author, described often as the Man Booker winner, Ian McEwan. His latest is a novel called Nutshell. Your narrator describes pressing his ear against the wall of his mother's uterus to better hear her conversations. Now, did you do any research? Do we have any idea what a fetus actually is aware of? Can a fetus experience wine like his mother? Know whether her heartbeat is a little faster than usual? Things like that.
We could be pretty sure that a fetus in its 38th week would be fully able to hear the mother's heartbeat. Whether a fetus would have a good, sensible opinion on a tasty Sancerre, I think, is a little beyond us. But a neuroscientist friend of mine once told me emotional states are physical states. So this opened up a huge opportunity for me. My fellow can hear his mother's heart race, but he can also hear her viscera. He can see the squelching of everything around her, the laundrette din, as he sometimes says, and he blesses her loudly squelching heart. So every time she feels fear or she's dissembling, he knows what the body is doing. Even though the mind stays cool, the body can be in terror.
You've also included several really funny scenes that I can't describe in much detail because the FCC doesn't allow me to, but of a fetus thinking about what's happening when his mother is having sexual intercourse.
Yes. Claude and Trudy foolishly make love in a rather wild way for a lady who's in her 38th week. So I don't recommend this. But he does have an especially unprivileged view of all this.
Well, in this country, we don't recommend drinking wine while one is pregnant either.
Exactly.
Is it different in England?
No, we have exactly the same worries about this. As he says himself, it lowers everybody's intelligence, not just fetuses.
You probably more than most serious writers have had quite a few of your books made into films. The Comfort of Strangers, The Cement Garden, Enduring Love, Atonement, a number of the short stories from First Love, Last Rites. And now I've read that two more of your novels on Chesil Beach and The Children Act are being made into films.
Yeah, together. I mean, they're by chance. They're starting more or less on the same day.
Do you get involved in those projects?
Well, I've written the screenplays for these two.
I've written a number of screenplays over the years.
I'll be running backwards and forwards between different rehearsal rooms. So I am very involved. But sooner or later, it's looming. My moment of involvement will cease. Everything will become the directors and the designers and the actors. And I'll just pay the luxury of courtesy visits to the set.
Have you made it particularly difficult in this case to translate this novel into a film in the future?
Well, computer-generated
a lot of
imagery.
Sonogram
images. Actually, we've already had an offer. I think it would be near impossible, but people like a challenge, so clearly there's a possibility of it.
Well, it's an interesting book, partly because it's serious on one level and very funny on others. Did the funny scenes just sort of come along, whether you expect them to or not?
I think once you have that first little gift of a fully aware fetus, things follow. The wine, the food, the emotions. One thing just follows another. So I felt lucky in a way. Once I had that first sentence, I was off and running and having a nice time. I did think, I don't know how this is going to go down with everyone else, but I'm having fun.
Ian McEwan, I mentioned that he won the Man Book. He's also won the National Book Critics Circle Award, the W.H. Smith Literary Award, the Whitbread Award. Have I missed any?
Probably. I can't remember.
Oh. The Nobel Prize. No, the Somerset Maugham Award.
Yeah, that's what one gets right at the beginning of your career, if you're lucky. £500, and it was set up by Somerset Maugham, or its trust, to enable a writer to travel for a couple of years. Now, I think £500 would probably just about get you from London to New York and maybe one other stop. But wonderful to have, actually, right at the start of your career.
Ian McEwan's latest novel is Nutshell. It is published in the Nan A. Talese imprint at Doubleday. It's always a pleasure to have you on our show.
Thank you. It's great to be back.